This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, we continue to stream live on the ESPN app, SiriusXM 371, an assortment of the radio stations, Chester Fuller, Robert Otto, cast of thousands. Wes is down in Tallahassee. He's got the call tomorrow night with Florida State. And Mark Herzlick in one of the ACC's best towns, Charlottesville, Virginia, as he's loaded up.
I was just having my group.
Yeah.
My granola, guys. Yeah. My granola. I know you love granola, right?
Yeah, I noticed you put that thing back down where it belongs and not in your mouth. That stuff's nasty. Hey, listen, Herzlick, get you a cold slice of pizza. That is the breakfast of champions, my man. Cold slice of pizza at 5 a.m. Get you going every single day. All right, let's get cranked up, man. You're in Charlottesville. Wahoo, wah. We got an Alliance showdown. We've got brunch tomorrow. And it's on our network, brought to you by Subway. Hint, hint. Here's an idea. So what do we got? Man, Virginia coming off a shutout. They get big, bad Big Ten boys come rolling in there. Bronco Mendenhall's guys. This is a really, really good test for the Hoos this weekend.
Yeah, it is a good test. And you know, you're right. Anytime you post a shutout, it's difficult to do. And I think Bronco Mendenhall was pleased with what he saw from his defense versus William & Mary. And really what we saw from Brennan Armstrong in this offense. I mean, when you look at the quarterback position at UVA, for a long time it's been, yes, we've had athletic quarterbacks, we've had guys who can do multiple things, but now you've got multiple guys that can also play quarterback. And watching Brennan Armstrong, four touchdowns he accounted for himself, two through the air, two on the ground last week. He was also accurate with the football. And it was funny watching the game last night, the Cowboys Cowboys versus Tampa Bay, is a similar release to Dak Prescott. A little pat on the ball and a little sling, lobbing the ball into his receivers, but he's super accurate with what he does. And then when you add in Keaton Thompson and Jacob Rodriguez, they're football player position guys that can both take snaps under center or in the shotgun, do jet sweeps. This is a Robert and I offense that is more multiple, more diverse, and have more kind of wrinkles than I've ever seen from him. And it looks like it's really settling in well, and everybody gets the concepts. And as long as they can hang on to the football, their offense is one that we really got to watch this year because they can do so much.
Mark, do you get the impression that it's going to be a majority of their run game is going to be centered around Armstrong or Keaton Thompson or Rodriguez? I mean, all these quarterbacks in one form or fashion. Ira Armstead came in, looked good last week as well. I mean, do we get the impression that while Wayne Talapapa, Mike Hollins, all those guys are on the roster, it's going to be pretty much the quarterback run game that sets Virginia's offense moving?
Right now, yes. I think as the season progresses, I think Mike Hollins is a guy that we really got to watch out for. You know, it's not going to show up on the stat sheet because a holding call called it back, but he had a kickoff return for a touchdown versus William & Mary where he looked dynamic and explosive. And so Mike Hollins is a guy that he can add a little bit more of that explosiveness out of the backfield on swing passes, but also on the toss. And so I think that he's a guy that can fit in as well. And Wayne Talapapa, I mean, he's never going to get the credit that he deserves for what he's done at UVA. He's continuously put on size, and he runs hard. And this is a guy that maybe not going to break away from the pack, but Wayne Talapapa, to me, is probably the heart of this offense, and he will always be a part of the inside dive play, the inside zone play, and a lot of that sets up some of the perimeter stuff. So, yeah, I think most of the production in terms of yards gained is going to come out of those swing guys, those football player positions. But Wayne Talapapa has the ability – to carry the ball 20, 25 times a game. He's never broken 100 yards on the ground for UVA, but he does the dirty work in there, and he'll get in the end zone plenty, 1-2 yard runs.
Mark, what do you expect from Illinois? They've been kind of Jekyll and Hyde, right? Looked pretty good against Nebraska in the season opener. Everybody's high-fiving Brett Bielema being back in the Big Ten. He's a good football coach. Then all of a sudden they lose to UT San Antonio. And I know Bronco Mendenhall is 1-4 against Big Ten teams. I don't think that comes into play tomorrow. But Illinois, you just don't know. That's an old football team. 29 seniors, bunch of super seniors. So they've got a bunch of old men rolling into Charlottesville tomorrow. So what do you think you're going to get from Illinois' side in this fistfight?
Yeah, a bunch of old men, but they play old-style football too. You know, you're going to see two backs in the backfield, quarterback under center. Mm-hmm. It's similar to how we talked to Bronco Mendenhall a few years ago when he was preparing for Boston College, where they played three tight ends and a fullback. He said, we had to take an extra week just to prepare for it because we don't see that in the ACC. It's going to be the same thing facing Illinois. You know, they're going to rotate in. They have five capable running backs, depending upon who's healthy right now. But you're going to see a heavy dose of Jakari Norwood and Reggie Love, two guys in the backfield that can really break it open. And you're going to see two tight end sets pretty much all day. So they're going to have to adjust to those tight end sets, the tight end movements after the play starts. And then also, it's a lot of gap scheme runs. So this is a Brett Bielema team that is a ground and pound. They want to run the ball. They have some threats on the outside as well. However, their bread and butter is pulling guards, kicking out defensive ends, and getting to the second level to linebackers to break open running holes. And so you're going to see 30, 35 runs in this game, and it's going to be a kind of a ball control offense. They huddle. They break the huddle. It's like you're watching the old school Baltimore Ravens. Just get out there and run the football straight down your throat, and unless UVA stops it early, it's going to be a problem.
Mark, is Brandon Peters expected to play? I know Sitkowski came in the Nebraska game and then I think went the distance last week, right?
Yeah, he did. He went the distance last week, and he played pretty well, actually. Brandon Peters is a guy that right now, we talked to the coaches, as of last night, he's still up in the air. So there's a possibility we're going to see. He probably is going to be a game-time decision. Their hope is they get Brandon Peters back. I think the two operate the offense in a very similar manner. Brandon Peters maybe has more of an NFL-caliber arm. However, the offense is going to be the same, and it's where you're going to get the play-action pass, the deep balls. Brandon Peters maybe has a little bit more athleticism as well, so I think Illinois hopes that he's back. However, they feel very confident in either quarterback running this offense.
All right, let's switch gears. Let's get the pom-poms out a second. Man, they are scoring like nobody's business up there at BC. We had Hasselbeck on yesterday. He's all fired up. Should be.
Pack.
Yes, sir?
Pack. This is not their Boston College. Herzlich, Hasselbeck, all these guys, they can't relate to all this. They were 22 personnel, line up and run it. The old Mike Cloud offense. This throwing the ball around the yard. Herzlich and these guys can't relate to all this right here.
We can ask them
about it, but they didn't play in this.
You probably never heard of this guy. You never heard of our quarterback, Matt Ryan. He didn't do any throwing the ball when he was there.
Right. Yeah, no, what's Wes talking about, man? Hey, it's all about winning games, man. BC right now is an offensive juggernaut. I suspect they're going to go to UMass and go, hey, it's time to eat some more cotton candy. I think they're going to put up a ton of points and yards tomorrow. This is an explosive group now. Offensive line's good. Jurkovic's out of sight. Wide receivers are strong. I mean, it's the whole package on the offensive side for BC.
Yeah, it is. And I think Phil Jurkovic in that game, that first game of the season, really settled into himself. You saw the first quarter. He was a little bit tentative throwing the football. However, he got back in that rhythm. And you just saw that play action deep ball. I mean, you couldn't tell whether that was Matt Ryan or that was Phil Dracovic. I mean, just the way he set up in the pocket after that play action, threw the ball downfield with confidence, hit the wide receiver in stride. So, yeah, I mean, they got weapons. This is, I think they got the best wide receiving core in the ACC. I mean, they have so much depth at that position and so much young talent as well that they're going to be able to put up big numbers. The real question is how well their defensive line is going to be able to play going forward. They got banged up. Shida Salah, I think, is a big surprise for them in terms of his progression, getting to the quarterback. So if they're able to continue that path and be stout defensive front-wise, this is a team that can put up a lot of points, and they can make some waves, and their schedule is one of the easiest in the ACC. So they could get 10 wins, or they could have 7, just depending upon whether they take care of business against the NC States and the Georgia Techs.
You know, Mark, it's interesting. We talk about, like, your era of BC, and then they went into this kind of line it up, run it on people era. They had a little bit of that with Tom O'Brien in the early years, I guess, like late 70s type deal. Now they've gotten into this, and I don't necessarily disagree with you about the receiving core, but I'll add this. I want to see the freshman Jaden Williams. I want to see some of these guys kind of emerge a little more, see how many candidates can you get to catch 20 or more balls this year for Jeff Hafley in that offense.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Trey Berry, a transfer from Jacksonville State at that tight end position, big guy, 6'7". He had a couple drops early in that game. However, I mean, he showed his ability to run after catch. He had a great hurdle along the sidelines for a touchdown. Yeah. But you talk about Jaden Williams, he had my favorite play of the entire game. And I texted Coach Halfley after the game and said, my favorite play was watching that young true freshman number 80 on a quarterback run. He was blocking his defender 20 yards downfield and pancaked him, just put him on his back. And that's a 5'7", 165-pound wide receiver, true freshman. And that guy's blocking downfield. So if that's the mentality that wide receiving room has, some more guys will develop. We talk about blocking, but that's just a mentality. I mean, you know that. You get wide receivers pancaking dudes, that picks the team up in the film room.
By the way, Trey Berry wins the Wide Receiver U Award, the WRU Award here on Packer and Durham this week. The hurdle put him over the top. One more thing for this conversation. 9/11, right? Really, really hits home for Boston College. And you'll see it tomorrow with the uniforms and everything else. But your thoughts, Mark, because tomorrow's going to be an interesting day in college football. We're going to be celebrating a lot of folks coming to a stadium for the first time in 2 years, wanting to see their team, but we also have the 20-year anniversary and really the remembrance and celebration of the men and women that made really incredible sacrifices, and it really hits home at Boston College.
Yeah, it does. And you know, the fact that they have the red bandana uniforms going on, I think that's such a good move by Jeff Halfley and Pat Kraft, you know, not necessarily having to save them for a home game. Remember, they're playing away for this week. And so they said, look, we cannot have these jerseys and not wear them on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And what an honor to Wells Crowther. I mean, he is an American hero and just so happened to be a Boston College alumni. And so we're so proud of him and what he and his family have done for this country, this nation. And, man, you know, You think about the players, and really, these becomes history lessons almost. You know, I was in the Westchester County Airport flying down here to Charlottesville, and there was a big sign on the wall that said, if you were born after this date in 2000, you cannot buy alcohol, right? And so what that tells me is, like, 2001, most of these guys on the team, they weren't even born yet when the 9/11 attacks happened. And so it's constantly reminding them about the patriotism in this country, the unity that we all showed after that attack, and the foundational concept of Wells Crowther, of service for others. I mean, Boston College is a Jesuit school. It's men and women for others, and he exemplified that. And so, you know, what a fantastic weekend versus an in-state opponent to wear these red bandana jerseys.
I tell you what, that is so well said. All right, finish up the granola. I know it's a big day. Packers jealous you're getting a bowl full of granola. That's good. I know. See, Pack, look right there.
I got good news for you, Mark. You can have mine.
Appreciate that. I'll have a double portion for you.
Put a little double honey on it.
Put kale on top of it.
No, put some honey on it.
Honey,
yeah, that's the only thing that makes that stuff taste good is a lot of sugar. Natural sugar, of course.
Take care, Mark.
I bet you
Thanks.
Dip your sushi in mayo and just douse it on, too.
No, dude. Again, cold pizza for breakfast, and then I'll worry about Bojangles at 10:05. That's how we're rolling. Subway sandwich for lunch. Man. Take care of all the sponsors.
All right, man.
Thanks.
Take care.
See you. Have a good game.
All right. Mark Herzlick, he and Chris Cotter, Jalen Johnson, the 11 a.m. start. Little brunch tomorrow at Scott Stadium with the Illini and the Cavaliers. Well, we mentioned Wells Crowther and the story of the man in the red bandana. And when we come back, we will have it for you next, right here on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Football Friday. It's also an important weekend. 9/11, 20 years ago. Do you remember where you were? Probably do. I think everybody in this country did if you were still rocking and rolling in this great country. I mean, it's the greatest country in the world, Wes, for a reason. For a reason.
Yep.
And you're going to celebrate it this weekend.
Yep. And one of the reasons is for the selfless acts of people like Wells Crowther, who perished in the attacks on the World Trade Center 20 years ago tomorrow. Wells Crowther was a lacrosse player at Boston College who grew up in Nyack, New York. Wanted to be a firefighter. In fact, befriended a lot of folks at the fire station as a kid. Started at an early age. Ended up being a junior firefighter. Graduated from Boston College. Ends up working in the financial district in New York and ends up in the World Trade Center. A star lacrosse player, became an American hero because of the selfless nature of his actions. And that one time dreamed to be a firefighter. You've never heard about the man in the red bandana? Get ready. Here it is.
He wasn't as tall and wasn't as large as a lot of the players, certainly when he's going against a lot of large defensemen at a Division I level. So you're talking about someone that kind of went in there and really had to scrap and fight for everything.
You know, Wells was just there for everybody and anybody. Wells was the first guy to pat you on the back if you didn't have a good game. And always a smile.
After graduating in 1999, Wells moved to New York City. He took a job as an equities trader for the firm Sandler O'Neill. His office was on the 104th floor in the South Tower of the World Trade Center.
He always wanted to be in business, and he wanted to be down on Wall Street. So he was living his dream. But also there was a piece missing.
Wells called me one day and said, "You know, Dad, I think I want to change my career." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "I think I want to be a New York City firefighter." He also said, "Dad, if I sit in front of this computer for the rest of my life, I'll go crazy."
This is live coverage from ABC News. An airplane has crashed into...
At 8:46 a.m. on September 11th, American Airlines Flight 11 flew into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. Wells, already at his desk in the South Tower, called and left a message for his mother.
"Mom, this is Wells. I want you to know that I'm okay."
In the 78th floor sky lobby of the South Tower, approximately 200 people were waiting to evacuate by the elevators.
"We were just chatting, and next thing you know, it just exploded."
At 9:02, United Flight 175 hit the building, its wings cutting a diagonal path between the 78th and 84th floors.
"And I went from one end to another, I just flew. And when I got up, I realized that I can't see because my glasses were filled with blood and I wiped it off. When I wiped it, I looked around, I said, oh my God. There was a lot of people completely dead."
Severely burned and stranded amongst the dying, Young and others still alive saw no way out.
"We looked around the floor. I said, well, we really can't move because we don't know what happened. We're afraid that we're going to take a step, the whole thing's going to sink in. Then all of a sudden, we saw a young man come out of nowhere. You heard this man's voice say, I found the stairs. Follow me. Only help the one that you can help. It's the way he said it. And we just got up, we follow."
The man led Young and others from the sky lobby to Stairway A, the only functional stairway left on the 78th floor. He led them down to the 61st floor, where they met firefighters who escorted them to working elevators on the 40th floor. After leading the group down, the man turned and headed back up the stairs.
He said, I'm going back up, because he knows there's a lot of people up there on the 78th floor that needed help. I mean, he could have continued going down with us, but he didn't. He decided to go back up.
The man climbed 17 floors, returning again to the burning sky lobby. There he found other survivors, including Judy Ween. She does not speak publicly about what happened. Her husband, Jerry, saw her at the hospital later the afternoon of September 11th.
She had just come out of surgery. At that point, she could hardly speak, but she wanted to tell me what had happened. Judy said she saw a young man appear out of nowhere. She watched him as he went around helping people, putting out fires, and administering aid to the injured. And he said, "Everyone who can stand, stand now. If you can help others, do so." Those were his exact words as she told it to me that afternoon.
After being led safely to the stairway, Ween saw the man go back to the burning sky lobby. At 9:59 a.m., the South Tower collapsed.
I saw it. I was standing right here in this room, watching, and I saw the tower collapse. I thought to myself, if Wells is lost, I literally dropped down on my knees here. And I said, and I prayed. I said, "Dear God, take me now. Leave him here. Take me now."
When I heard the news that the tower had come down, I knew in my heart of hearts that Wells was gone. I can't explain why, other than it was just a mother's heart knowing. Sorry.
Six months after the attacks, March 19th, 2002, Wells's body was found in what was the lobby of the South Tower, next to uniformed firefighters. Still, the details of his death remained a mystery. That May, the New York Times published an account from survivors inside the South Tower. One detail struck Wells's family immediately.
And that was Judy Ween saying, this mysterious man wearing a red kerchief was calling out, basically setting up a triage. The minute I saw the reference to the red kerchief, I went, "Oh my God, Wells, I found you."
Alison Crowther began to search for confirmation of what she already believed. She sent this photo of her son to Ween and another survivor mentioned in the article, Ling Young.
I looked at it very carefully. I said, "Yes, that was him. There was no question in my mind."
And so, that was a beautiful thing for all of us, that I finally found him. I finally found him, and for them too, that they would know who this man was.
To know that Wells, in that figurative sense, took off the equity trader hat and put it on the table, picked up his helmet, firefighter's helmet, and went to work. For me, that was an incredible, incredible thing to know.
Powerful, isn't it?
I tell you, every time I see it, it just reminds me, number one, of the selfless sacrifice that so many people made 20 years ago tomorrow, but also the selfless sacrifice of an individual who in many ways personifies kind of the, you know, Mark Herzlich said it, the Jesuit attitude of Boston College. I mean, you know, it was a real treat and a pleasure and a humbling experience a couple of years ago for Roddy Jones and Eric Wood and I to be at the Red Bandana game. You remember that? BC played Florida State. We were there for the ball game that day, Pac. And we had a chance to spend a couple moments with Wells' mom, Alison Crowther, who was just a remarkable woman, as you can imagine, who had also lost her husband. Jefferson Crowther had passed away within the last year. That was the first time that he was not there for the Red Bandana game. And you know, just the emotions of the whole deal. But when you see the piece, it's an amazing story. That's why he's an American hero. I mean, Hurst said it earlier, and he's right. He's an American hero. And I, personally and professionally, I'm grateful for the people that have documented the story the way they have. And the piece we showed you today, we're fortunate at ESPN and ACC Network, I think, to have three different people who have done stories about Wells Crowther, and they're all been done at an incredibly high level. And maybe more than that, but three that I know of. And It's a credit to the work that gets done in storytelling by this company, and certainly we hope on this network as well to show you the story of Wells Crowler.
You know, if you're old enough, and you know, Mark's pointed out, I know a couple other folks have too, you know, there's a lot of guys that are on rosters that weren't even born for this moment that we're talking about. But if you're old enough, yep. There's certain things that happen in your lifetime that you know exactly where you were when you saw mm-hmm. or heard the news. And, you know, Dabo alluded to Pearl Harbor. You know, I mentioned, you know, the Kennedy assassination when the space shuttle exploded. You knew exactly where yep. you were if you're old enough. 9/11, for all of us that are old enough, you knew the exact, I mean, I could take you to the spot when you first heard mm-hmm. it. And I wrote, jotted down 8:46 a.m. because I remember driving to WFNZ radio to start my day and heard the news. And like everybody else, you just thought, man, what a terrible accident. How in the world could an airplane mm-hmm. fly into the World Trade Center? You had no idea of the word attack, especially on our soil. Right. What, excuse me? What are you talking about? Yep. And then all of a sudden at 9:02, bam, here comes number two. And then you realize, uh-oh, something's up. And again, it was a surreal moment for this country. And that's why I think tomorrow will be a fascinating day while we celebrate these student athletes going out there and entertaining us on football fields all day, all night. Keep in mind what happened 20 years ago. Like I said, never, ever forget. And all of us.
Yeah.
Just keeping that in mind. When if team's losing, oh, I can't believe the coach. Hey, take a deep breath, man. Take a step back. There are, you know, put it in perspective in terms of what's going on here. But tomorrow will be a fascinating day as we celebrate college football and also the men and women that really offered the ultimate sacrifice when really yep. the world was going crazy right here on our soil 20 years ago. Hard to believe.
And the Eagles tomorrow wear the white red bandana jerseys when they play at Amherst to meet UMass in a ball game at McGurk Stadium. A variety of reports out there. Wells Crowler is credited with saving as many as a dozen lives that day on 9/11. So pleased we could show that to you, certainly on this Friday. When we come back, Kelsey Riggs will join us. She will be at Tigertown tomorrow. Kelsey, run down the hill tomorrow, maybe, Pack? What do you think? We got to tee her up for see what she's got going. Better I remember a couple of years ago, she walked to the top of the stadium. I remember that.
Yeah, you better eat your granola. You're going to run down that hill tomorrow. Keep your filthy hands off that rock. You're not going to give me 110%. Guarantee you. You'll be rocking in the valley tomorrow night.
All right, Kelsey Riggs is next when Packer and Durham continues on a Football Friday right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. It's a Friday. It's a football Friday in the ACC. Couple tickets still left at Wallace Wade Outdoor if you are in the mood. All right, if you're in the mood. A&T, the mighty Duke Blue Devils tonight. All right,
mighty
Mr.
Blue
Durham.
Devils.
That's it, mighty Duke Blue Devils. All right, let's go down to Clemson, South Carolina. Kelsey Riggs will be front yep. and center in Death Valley. 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. kickoff. The Tigers looking to get back in their winning ways. Miss Kelsey, how are we doing?
What's going on, you guys? I'm good. Happy to be here in Clemson. Excited for the home opener. Got my coffee already. Got my morning started. So excited to spend it with you guys.
And the Tigers are looking to try to get back in their winning ways. Very seldom do you see them sub 500 at 0-1, but tough game last week against the Dogs. I expect the offense to figure it out tomorrow about 5:04 p.m.
I would think that that's going to be the case, Pack. You know, we've got our coaches' meetings with Clemson later today. We talked to South Carolina State already, and you heard them say throughout the week, South Carolina State coach is like, man, this is a tough game to play in after they're coming off of that, you know, that game with Georgia and wanting to come in and show, okay, hey, here are all the things. But yeah, I think they'll have it sorted out real early. I've been impressed all week with especially DJ Uiagalelei and what he has said and the way he kind of took ownership of last week. I got to stop by practice yesterday and talk with Coach Sweeney and the players a little bit. And the mood there was really good. You know, Coach Sweeney walked right on over to us. And I think, for me, it all starts with him and his mindset and his approach, right? And not that he's so tied up in what happened. He came over and was cracking jokes with us and asking us if we were in Charlotte and you know, saying, hey, well, you know, we scored 10 points, 7 were for the other team. And so, you know, just trying to say, okay, like, we're going to be fine. And that's kind of been the approach going forward. And I'm excited to see what they're able to do. It's going to be a rocking crowd of like 81,000. So it'll be a great game.
Kelsey, I'm curious, too, about the mentality here, because Clemson doesn't lose very much, and that's a good thing, right? I mean, we all know how strong the program has been now, really, for what, last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. The idea of leadership within the locker room, the veteran guys, and they got numerous guys, 5, 6, some of them 7 years, I guess, in Skalski's case, but the idea that those guys – share that ownership of the football team with the younger guys like DJ or Will Shipley or guys on defense that are going to have to make plays. Somehow or another, I think that's a pretty valuable piece this week.
Yeah, I definitely think it is. I mean, and they have a lot of the super seniors and leaders and James Skalski, and you heard him talk this week about, okay, we still had in our minds what happened last year in that last game, and that the defense was so proud of the performance that they came out and gave against Georgia because they had a bad taste in their mouth from the way that last year ended, so that they were able to come out and play that game. They were against an incredible Georgia offense. I think the defense felt really good, and they have a lot of good leaders. But as you said, I mean, I've been impressed with hearing how DJ has been a leader, and not just DJ. Also, you mentioned Will Shipley. He's one of the guys on this team that comes in as a freshman, and they say that guys who are senior leaders, who are the 6 years, they listen to him, they look up to him. And obviously the run game is something that they'll look to improve this week. And Will Shipley is someone that they've been really excited about from the beginning. But the fact that they do have so many leaders on this team, whether it is the older guys or the younger guys, I think that's always an interesting combination when some of these young guys are able to not just make an early impact on the field, but an early impact on the locker room. And look, it doesn't get much bigger than the game they just played in, right? So if you're able to come out of that game, learn from it, take some good takeaways, figure out what you need to fix. They had some freshmen that got really good experience, and that impressed a lot of people in that game, even though it didn't end up being the result they wanted. So I think we'll see some of those leaders really shining on Saturday too.
Kelsey, talking to Dabo yesterday on the radio show, the one thing that that you always get with Dabo, he's so upbeat and positive. There doesn't seem to be any moping or woe is me, and he's just so excited for what the day presents. And he said, you know what, we've had 3 unbelievable days of practice. He said, these guys, you'd have no idea whether they were practicing for Georgia or practicing for South Carolina State. You'd never sense it when you'd go to practice. And to me, that goes back to the culture that they have built. You know, win or lose, there's a standard by which they kind of measure themselves. And Dabo even said, hey, there were times we would win games and I'd be fuming Sunday and Monday looking at tape because it wasn't the standard by which we have to be. And he loved a lot of things about what they did last Saturday night, even though they lost the game to 10-3. So I suspect for some folks who have been trying to figure out a way to tarnish the Clemson dynasty, if you will, and, hey, it's over and done with, I think there's an agenda and a narrative with some others at other networks. But I think Clemson's going to go about their business tomorrow and the rest of the season, and they'll be a tough out for everybody left on the schedule.
100%. First of all, I would love to get Dabo's Cliff Notes version of always how to have this like positive attitude and mindset and just demeanor about him, because he is. He's just, you walk into a room where he is and he's always the same person. He just draws people in and you see why he's able to recruit the type of players that he has and have the type of program that he does. But I got the same impression yesterday when we were around and when we were talking with him. You know, it's not going to be doom and gloom because we lost to a really good Georgia football team. It's okay. Let's see what we can learn from it and let's move on. And the next game is South Carolina State. And yeah, this is a game that, I mean, I don't even know what the spread is off the top of my head right now, but it's not the same game they played in last week, but it is the first home game. It is the next opportunity to go out there and get better. And I think that that's kind of, you know, the mindset that Dabo Swinney always brings to this group. He walked up yesterday and to your point about just having this fun demeanor, this, okay, you know, he's locked in, but always looking forward to what's next. He's like, we got this. We did this at practice. We've got this with my son who's playing high school football tomorrow. And we're having tacos tonight and we're watching the Bucks and the Cowboys. And so this is going to be a great day. And so, you know, he's always very realistic. And obviously they would have loved to come out of that game with a win. But I don't think you're going to hear any doom and gloom from this program. I would love to see some of the other teams in the ACC. You know, we've got some big games this weekend, and you want to see those teams continue to go out and be successful. And then when Clemson and some of these other teams play them down the road, then there's just even more weight to those games, I think. But all you can do is control what you can control. You can control what's in front of you. I think that's a message that we've heard Dabo preach for a long time now. And they don't lose a lot of games. They certainly don't lose a lot of back-to-back games if you look at losing last year and this year back-to-back. So I think we'll see a great performance early on in this game.
Kelsey, we're going to look at kind of where they are on some things. First of all, 17 straight wins in home openers. I mean, one shy of the record there. 28 straight wins at home. My goodness. 100. We saw this earlier in the week when Ross Taylor talked about 130 of 135 have never lost a home game. 36 straight wins against the FCS since 1978. And you had an opportunity to do something yesterday not many people do. Some people see video clips, but they don't get to hear practice. You got to hear practice yesterday. Did you think they were being coached hard? Did you think they were realizing kind of this is game two of a long journey? What did you hear at practice yesterday?
You know, more than anything, Wes, I just think it was a lot of guys who were locked in. You know, we weren't there for the whole practice, but we were there for the back half. And it was a focus group. It was an intense group. You know, you look at this game versus last week, and I would say that this team is preparing the exact same way that they prepared for Georgia to get ready for South Carolina State. Now, the game's going to look a lot different. We'll be on the sidelines tracking all the players that they plan to get in because it is a different roster this year. You know, with COVID, they've got an extended roster. So I think we're going to get to see a lot of players, which, to be honest, that's an exciting thing, too. We talked with South Carolina State head coach Buddy Pough, and he is just a joy to talk to, first of all. His guys are so looking forward to this opportunity to come out and play in Death Valley and to have this moment and to be on this big stage. And he talked about what it means for their players to have this opportunity, but also for the Clemson players. You know, there's a lot of guys that will get to see the field in this environment, in this home game for the first time or for one of only a few times in their Clemson career, but they come here to be a part of this program and to be a part of moments like this. So I would say more than anything, they were just locked in. You know, it seemed like business as usual. Everybody knows what happened last week and everybody knows that it's a long season and this is just week two and South Carolina State is next. And so it's the first home game. It's going to be a big game for CJ Spiller as well. I got to talk to him yesterday. He's going to be honored at halftime, and that's going to be a really cool moment. He's really looking forward to that opportunity. Being inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame is really cool. And he says being not just inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame, but celebrating that with 80,000 people at Clemson, the place that made him who he is, and having his family around is going to be really special as well.
Kelsey, we just got done talking to Herzlich. He's up in Charlottesville eating granola. So it's 9:45 a.m. I don't know what the rest of the day looks like, but there is an opportunity for you to balance all this granola stuff out with either a Smoking Pig, Max Drive-In, Esso Club, or maybe Rick Irwin's later in the evening to balance all that healthy eating that Herzlich's doing up in Charlottesville.
Listen, I love Herzlich. I love working with him and Cotter. Cotter and I were always getting steak, and Mark was trying to talk us into a salad. But you'll be proud because I did. We went to Rick Irwin's last night, and it was amazing. We got in yesterday, went there last night, had an incredible steak, had way too much food. I will never sit between our producer, Ben Hogg, and Dave O'Brien again, because then when the desserts come, they're kind gentlemen that are just pushing all of them my way and wanting me to have the desserts first and last. So I probably need to eat some granola after last night, but we'll see. I probably need to, I heard you guys talking about the stadium. I probably need to walk up in the stands tomorrow. I can tell you that's not going to happen, though. That's definitely not going to happen.
You've done
Granola it. Probably won't.
Yeah, you've been there, done that, walk in the stadium steps, but you might need to balance out and go lighter. I'd go like triple cheeseburger at Max and a shake and call it even. That'd be a good balance.
Yeah.
That sounds good. That sounds good. And then maybe some smoking before I leave. I can get up.
That's it. You got to balance it out. You got to figure it out. I'm jealous.
Maybe more important before we let you go, when you get back to Hartford on Sunday, you're going to know where the car is? I mean, because we've been down that road before.
Yeah, last week was a tough week. I got back to the airport. I checked the phone to see the note of where the car was, and it was a note from the week before, which means I didn't update it, which means I did not know where the car was. And we had two games last week, so I left Wednesday. I didn't come back until Monday because I went home for my grandfather's 93rd birthday. So it was a struggle. The good news is, I guess it's good news, this time the parking lot was so full, I had to park on the roof. So it feels very memorable. You guys have reminded me to actually put that in my phone, but now that we've said it out loud so many times, maybe Fridays we can just do this. We can talk out where I parked so that by the time Sunday rolls around, I still remember. We'll see.
Hartford Airport needs to give you a spot, man. They need to give you a designated Kelsey Riggs exclusive spot. So you automatically know where you're going as soon as you get home.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
More of it if you guys made that happen.
Well, yeah. Bradley International Airport, we need to have a small sponsorship of a parking spot for Kelsey Riggs.
That's it.
That'd be awesome.
That's it.
All right.
But it would help me personally.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell OB and Tim hello. Have a great call tomorrow. Look forward to watching.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Kelsey Riggs. Don't forget, she's part of the big package tomorrow. Four ball games. We get you started though. 10 a.m. The Huddle, presented by Marathon Pack.
I like it.
Right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. A full preview of games starting at 11 with Virginia and Illinois and finishing with the Huddle After Dark tomorrow night. Right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. You know what it is. It's Friday in the fall, and we're coming back with the one thing you absolutely have to have this weekend. The Bojangles Weekend Menu is next.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Oh, no. Points Step of pressure. On. Look at him. He's got it tucked up. He's ready to go. Look, you got
high
it.
Tight.
You got it high and tight. High and tight. That's right.
I'm going to Bojangles. I will be at Bojangles in 13 minutes. Chester riding shotgun. Fuller in the back. Two biscuits, no butter for the dogs. I'm going to go a pair, because I'm hungry. All that granola talk, I am hungry. I'm going to go a pair, one chicken biscuit, and one sausage and egg for me, please. Through the drive-thru.
Wow.
Bojangles coming up in now 12 minutes from right now.
Okay, real good. In about 12 minutes, Roddy Jones, LaRisha Harris, and I are going to wander out here and watch the end of Florida State's walkthrough on a Friday. How's that?
Advantage Pac-Man is the answer to that question.
All right, let's get to the Bojangles. Let's get to the Bojangles weekend menu, please. Can we do that? Tonight on the West Campus in Durham, Wallace Wade Stadium, 8 o'clock, Matt Barry, Eric McClain, Bridget Condon on hand for North Carolina A&T and Duke.
Outdoor
Friday
Stadium.
Friday Night Football.
Outdoor
right
Stadium.
Right here on ACC Network at Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium.
There you go.
Quadruple header tomorrow. Illinois at Virginia, an Alliance game at 11 a.m. Rutgers, Syracuse, more action from the Alliance at 2 o'clock. Both those games presented by Subway, Pack.
I like it.
South Carolina State at Clemson, 5 o'clock start from Frank Howard Field at Clemson's Memorial Stadium.
Yeah.
And then at 8 o'clock, ACC Primetime Football presented by GEICO, Jacksonville State at Florida State. Roddy Jones, LaRisha Harris, and I will be there for you. Sunday, we got field hockey at noon, James Madison at Wake Forest, and then South Florida at Miami women's soccer at 2 o'clock. Did you sneak Coach Howard in there on a Friday, by the way?
You better believe it. You're coming to my house tomorrow, 5 p.m. Make sure you leave it like you found it. Perfectly perfect.
I wonder if old Danny Ford's going to get off the hemp farm. Come on over and check that out tomorrow. Very, very hot out there. Danny, I don't know if Coach Ford will be there. He's been busy, man. Danny's on the farm. He's out there at the farm.
Danny going to watch Arkansas, Texas. He'll stay at the house, watch Arkansas, Texas tomorrow.
I tell you what now, I had a bunch of Hog fans and Texas fans calling the radio show yesterday. They want a piece of themselves now. That'll be a good one, too. Check that out.
Yeah. A lot of good football. You can join the Pac-Man in his regalia tomorrow. You know, just plop it down in a chair at 11 a.m. and never leave for 13 hours.
I have the life tomorrow. Saturdays... Mm-hmm. Saturdays, I've got a pretty good gig. I work all day and all night, but I've got a good gig. And now that Subway's on board, that's even better. We got Subway tied in the ACC network. Bojangles good to go. Perfect combo for any tailgate tomorrow at an ACC venue. Bojangles, Subway. You cannot go wrong.
Nicely done. Thanks to Derek Satterfield and the people at Florida State for hosting the West Durham Friday Roadshow. Next week, we'll be at Duke Pack on the Friday show, by the way. Looking forward to being at Durham next week.
I'll be right here.
For the Friday show.
I'll be right here.
I know. Good enough.
I'm not allowed.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy a full slate of ACC football. We'll see you Monday morning, 7 a.m. with Packer and Durham.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.